Just once I'd love to give a sermon in January, but maybe, maybe that's not in the cards. In the reading today, I quoted from Diana Eck, the professor of religion at Harvard, who said that we are the church of the new millennium. Now, that's a pretty bold statement to make, maybe even shocking, especially for Unitarians who don't think of their religion in such grandiose terms. But we should listen to Ms. Eck because her curriculum vitae, CV, is 28 pages. My life story isn't even 28 pages. But on the other hand, there are a couple things to think about. One is that there are 7 times more Roman Catholics in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia than there are Unitarians in the world. And another thing to consider is that since the two denominations merged, the Unitarians and the Universalists in 1961, the number of the two denominations hasn't changed significantly. So today we're pretty much where we are, we're 51 years ago. So it wasn't surprising that Galen Gingrich talked about this particular dichotomy when I heard him speak at the General Assembly, our annual convocation last year on that 50th anniversary of the merger. And he talked not only about how we can become the church of the new millennium, he also talked about what we need to do merely to survive. So here you have on one hand a respected theologian minister saying we are the church of the new millennium. The other person says we may not be around by the end of the millennium. And some of you may think, well, I don't really care one way or another. I like my Unitarian Universal just the way it is. Thank you very much. I don't care if we are the church of the new millennium or not. Well, that's a very UU kind of way of thinking. But I think we should all take a look at a couple of the reasons why we should be, or why we are, the church of the new millennium. One reason is that there needs to be a counterweight to the religion of the right wing. I'll read something else that Gingrich said that's also pretty bold. He said, many religious practitioners use faith not to enlighten, but to enslave, turning back the clock on many tenets of civilization, whether it's women's reproductive freedom, shredding the safety net for the needy, or replacing science with ideology. I don't think that there has ever been an assault on the gains that we've made in society, whether it's marriage equality or ending areas of racism, that's been under assault as much as it is today. So today more than ever, I think that statement is relevant. As a matter of fact, many of us here are engaged in the Pennsylvania voter ID program to combat a very discriminatory and I think outrageous voter identification law that was passed here in Pennsylvania. The second reason why we should adhere to what Professor X said and do what we need to do to be the church of the new millennium is that it is in concert with our UU principles. And if we believe in those 7 principles that guide us as Unitarian Universalists, it behooves us to become bigger, stronger, and more influential. Because if we believe, for example, in the democracy and equality, then we need to be more effective in making that happen. And one of the ways we can make that happen is to be bigger and stronger. So, how can we be the church of the new millennium. In his speech, Reverend Gingrich said a lot of things that many of us have heard before, one of which was that Unitarians are more interested in their personal journeys than they are in their mission as Unitarian Universalists. Sort of a double-edged sword for us. We love the freedom that we have, but sometimes we get a little too absorbed in our own path of religion. He also said something that may not surprise many of you Unitarians, that we have authority issues, that Unitarian Universalists have, I think, sometimes to a fault, problems with people in power, authorities. Gingrich says, "You use our dismissive of God and skeptical of religion. But if we are to survive the new millennium, if not thrive in the new millennium, we need to, as Gingrich says, redefine God and embrace religion." I have a good friend, John Morris, who's an attorney and a philosophy major at Yale, who is constantly telling us that we are not a religion because we don't believe in God. So it's a kind of an ongoing argument my wife and I have with him. But the reality is, in a Gallup poll, 94% of people say they believe in God in some form. So if we only attract that other 6%, that's kind of a losing strategy. The God thing is particularly sticky for we Unitarians. In a survey by the American Religious Identification Survey, that's an odd-sounding name, but that's what the name of the survey was. When faced with the question, do you agree or disagree on the existence of God? 20% of Unitarians refused to answer. which prompted the survey to say, that may suggest some doubt. You think? But among those who did say they believed in God, the percentage was considerably lower than that 94%. I think it's fair to say that most of us are on a kind of a continuum when it comes to God. There are some people who absolutely firmly believe there is a God, and there are many of us who are atheists. I'm not one, but I'm sort of like on that continuum of not really sure, yeah, maybe, sort of. I like to consider myself to be a devout agnostic. The good news, however, is that we do not have to redefine religion in terms that other people use. We can define religion and God in our own terms. What we have to do, however, is sort of package it a little differently. And the reason we have to package it differently is that many people look at religion and God in a very personal way, a personal connection with God or a personal connection with religion. And so we need to develop that sort of personal connection as much as possible. Some of you may think, as I do, that if I wanted a personal connection with God, I'd still be a Catholic. But others may think, well, okay, I'm willing to give it a shot. One example of how people relate to religion is the way people relate to Jesus. Gingrich said this about Jesus. Jesus, as Son of God, is a brilliant conceit. wrong-headed but brilliant, and well-packaged for individual conscription. That's another way of saying that Catholics and Christians in general are good marketers. Lots of people, millions of people in fact, have been sold on the idea that if they believe in Jesus, if they take Jesus as their personal savior, that they'll automatically go to heaven. Unfortunately for we Unitarians, that usually falls on deaf ears. My friend Marietta Tanner once said that since we don't believe in heaven, we should do good things right here on earth. And that's sort of the way most of us feel. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we can't sort of market, if you will, our religion to other people. One of the ways that we can look at God, according to Gingrich, is that we are the face of God. We are the, when we do things, we are the face of God. We are the human form of a divine, which I'm sure is blasphemous for just about any other religion. But when you think about it, when we are doing the kinds of good works that we do all the time, when we tutor a kid at Lingelbach, we're the face of God. When we're building a house for the homeless, we are the face of God. When we are, as we are at this very moment, housing people who are homeless, we are the face of God. God is also something that we look at in terms of nature. My late mother-in-law used to point to a wonder of nature and say, like a beautiful sunset, for example, and say, God made that. Well, I would say, I didn't say it to her, but I would say, no, God didn't make that. God is that. As I said before, we don't need to define God the way Jews and Catholics do, but we do need to define God in some fashion. One of the ways that we can define God is using our Unitarian principles. Someone asks us, do we believe in God? We can say, yes. I believe in a God who recognizes the inherent worth and dignity of every person. A God who demands justice, equity, and compassion. A God who encourages us to accept one another and encourages spiritual growth in our congregation. A God who allows the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. A God who promotes the right of conscience, and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society. A God whose goal is world peace, liberty, and justice for all. A God who asks us to respect the interdependent web of all existence of which we are part. That is our God. And that is a God that I believe can appeal to anyone. If somebody asks you for your definition of God, read them those principles. And then say, what do you got? I dare you, what do you got that's better than this? We joke about the elevator speech that we have to give, and for those of you who are not Unitarians, it simply means that we have to come up with a definition of what Unitarianism is, and or our version of it. From the time you get on the elevator on the 10th floor until you get to the lobby. So that's maybe, what, a minute? And usually we fumble around with, usually we say what we don't believe in, which is not very reassuring. And then we talk about things that give people the idea that we, sort of anything goes. But what we don't realize is we have more commonality than most Unitarians think. I mean, on the major issues of the day, 99% of us agree. Marriage equality, ending racism, economic justice, and we can go on and on and on. It's the little things we disagree about, like should the organ be there or over here? Should we have pews or chairs? You know, that kind of stuff we disagree about. But on the big things, we're in agreement. And so we need to project that commonality as much as possible. By the way, if somebody asks you for your elevator speech, ask them for their elevator speech. Because if you ask, let's say, a Christian what they believe in, they might say, well, I believe in Jesus. Yeah, and? I mean, that's a little bit general. Can you give me some specifics, please? Those seven principles cover a lot of ground, a lot more than just saying, I believe in Jesus. As a matter of fact, one of the ironies of being a Unitarian is that we actually follow the precepts of Jesus a lot more than many Christians. I think it was our own Charles Gabriel, as a matter of fact, who did a sermon on the fact that we are more like Jesus than most Christians. And so did Jefferson. Jefferson was a nominal Unitarian, and he put together the Jefferson Bible. How many know the Jefferson Bible? Okay, maybe half. What he did was he took out all the smoke and mirrors, the walking on water and changing water into wine, and he just put in the stuff, he cut and pasted all the stuff that talked about feeding the hungry and clothing the naked and housing the homeless, and he put it in here. And I always thought if I were ever elected president and I had to choose a Bible to swear the oath on, I would swear it on the Jefferson Bible. Not coincidentally, this particular edition of the Jefferson Bible has an introduction by Forrest Church, who, as most of us know, is a very well-known, perhaps the best-known Unitarian minister of the last half century. The other way in which we can be attractive to other people is in how we look at life. Gingrich was talking about how most other religions, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, have an ancient text and ancient revelations. And what they try to do is to make those revelations fit in today's society. Well, if you have a book that was written 4,000 years ago by people who were essentially uneducated, it's kind of hard to relate that to today's world, which is why you have these televangelists always telling everybody, well, this is what the Bible means, or a Muslim cleric saying, this is what the Quran means. We don't have to worry about that, because the way we look at religion is we say, okay, this is the world today. How do I live a purposeful life in the world today? And that allows us the freedom to look at stuff in the Hebrew Bible, the New Testament, the Quran, the writings of great men and women throughout the ages, speeches. I think the Declaration of Independence, for example, is a sacred document. It's a spiritual document. One of the things that Gingrich said was that in doing this, in reading these texts, in not being bound by ancient revelations and ancient texts, this kind of thing that we do here every Sunday is a kind of a transformation in our lives. We are transformed in some fashion, hopefully, when we leave here. And I know that in my years as a Roman Catholic, I don't want to sound like I'm knocking Roman Catholics, but I don't remember ever being transformed. But I do remember on a number of occasions being transformed and inspired by many things that have happened right here in the sanctuary. Whether it's the singing of our choir, the preaching of our minister and other people at the pulpit, things that many of you have said, that's a transformative thing. And I think I have the best of both worlds, and I think we have the best of both worlds. That is, that we have this commonality, and yet we are free to sort of spin our own take on the truths that we all believe in. And I can honestly say that I am more religious today than I have ever been. But at the same time, I'm less constrained by religion than I've ever been. Now, to me, that's a tough combination to beat. And I think Diane Eck was onto something. Amen, and may it be so.
I'll announce in a moment. Please rise as you're